Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home. This is my fireplace. This is the fireside chat that I have just about every week of the year with you. And it's completely unrehearsed. There's no script. There's almost no planning. It's just a way for me to get to talk to you and take your questions so you get to know me and my ideas better. And for that matter, I hope, get to know life better. Because I love offering thoughts about life so that people will live a better life, a happier life, a kinder life, and everything in between. What I am going to talk to you today about is so big that I'm tempted to say there's almost no subject of greater significance in your daily life. And not only that, we live in an age that rejects this basic teaching about life, and it's the biggest, perhaps the biggest cause of our problems. And it is this: what's more important, actions or feelings slash thoughts? What's more important, how you behave or how you feel? Well, the answer should be obvious. There's no comparison. How you act is infinitely more important than how you feel or how you think. So I'm going to give you an example. I think this might be, well, no, it can't be. It can't be the first time I addressed it publicly, but it's the first time I remember addressing it publicly. It was very early in my radio career, and a guy called up. And he said, "Dennis, I feel very guilty. I am a bad son." The guy was about 35 years old. And I was about 35 years old. And he said, "I'm a bad son." I said, "Really? Why do you think you're a bad son?" And so he said, "This is why. I am the sole financial and emotional support of my mother, who has been sick for about five, 10 years. And I got to tell you, Dennis, there are times when I wish, and it's hard for me to even say Dennis, but there are times that I wish she would finally succumb to her illness and die." And I said, "Sir, in fact, you are a great son. You're not only not a bad son, you are a great son." And I will never forget, he thought, "Dennis, you're mocking me, right?" And it's amazing that he thought that. And I said, "No, I give you my word of honor. I am totally sincere. You are a great son." He said, "Dennis, did you not hear what I said?" I said, "Exactly. Because I heard what you said, am I saying you are a great son? Because despite how you think and feel, look at what you do for your mother. That's what matters. Not what you think, not how you feel, but how you act. In fact, he in some ways is an even greater son on some level than the son who would think, I hope she stays alive forever. Even though she's chronically ill, for that son, for whom it's not such a burden, you might argue it's not as great a moral achievement that he takes care of her as for the son for whom it is a burden. But I'm not here to assess who's better. Whoever does good is good. You don't have to think good or feel good to be good. You have to act good." This notion of the centrality of action over everything else has been one of the guidelines of my life. I have offered it to people all the time. I could spend the entire broadcast here, the entire fireside chat, just giving you examples, because it applies to everything. It applies to happiness. Act happy, you'll feel happy, because behavior changes the way you feel. Don't let feelings guide your behavior. Let behavior shape your feelings. That's another unbelievably important lesson. It has to do with everything. I'll give you another example in a completely different arena, religion. So people ask me, Dennis, what is the true religion? And I happen to be a religious Jew, a believing Jew, and all of that. But when people ask me that question, this is my answer. The true religion is the religion that produces God-centered, good people. I do not judge religions by their beliefs. I judge religions by the fruit that they produce. If a religion makes good people, generation after generation, I am impressed with that religion. Because God wants us to be good. That's my central theological tenet. God wants us to be good. All right? So that's a very important thing. That's why I don't have any problem. People call up my show and they say, this has been happening my whole life. You know, Dennis, it's really amazing. I've gone back to my Baptist church. I've gone back to my Catholic church because of you. And it's particularly ironic because you're Jewish and I'm back to Christianity because of a Jew. And I said, it's great. They go, why? You think it's great? I said, of course it's great. I want you to be a good person. I want you to have the Bible as your central text. This is what matters to me. So I really am consistent. This is what matters. It is your behavior. But we have abandoned that in the 60s when everything was overthrown. Everything, the post-World War II world. Everything good was overthrown. Some bad things were overthrown too, don't get me wrong. But almost everything good was overthrown. And one of them was the centrality of behavior. And so what happened was feelings became everything. Simple, a great example here. When my older son was about 2 or 3, he was in a park in L.A. and in Los Angeles. And his mom was with him. She told me the story. So a 5-6-year-old bully walks over and literally throws my son down on the ground. Just throws him down. It was an amazing thing, obviously. I wasn't there, but his mom was not prone to exaggeration. But here's the reason I'm telling you the story. The mother of this terrible kid ran over to him and said, what's troubling you, honey? What's troubling you, honey? Now, she should have yelled at him. Frankly, I wouldn't have thought it was so bad if she smacked him. We could talk about that whole issue another time. But she should have done something very, very severe. The issue is not what's bothering him. The issue is what he did to a little toddler. That's the issue. His feelings are not what are most important. His behavior is what is most important. But we have become a feelings-centered place. How do you feel about it? I'll give you another example. 48% of millennials do not believe in free speech for hate speech. Which is frightening, spectacularly frightening, that the freest country in the world would produce a generation, half of whose members do not believe in free speech. Because, please, you have to go to college to think so incoherently, oh, I believe in free speech, but no, it's not for hate speech. Then you don't believe in free speech. Free speech applies specifically to the speech you don't like. Now, why do they even call it hate speech? Because it's based on feeling. If I feel it's hate speech, I am prepared to ban it. Do you know how scary that is? Because I may think that your speech is hate speech, but I don't feel that I am free to ban it. How I feel about your speech is usually insignificant. Feelings are now everything. That's why we have safe spaces at colleges. Oh, a speaker may come that you differ with. Oh, go for stuffed animals and hot chocolate. And Play-Doh, and watch frolicking puppies on a video. They actually have that in campuses all over the United States. all based on feelings. I would say grow up. Go to the speaker you don't agree with. That's exactly what you should do. Grow up. Feelings-based life is an immature life. Babies feel. And they cry at the drop of a hat. And then they laugh at the drop of a hat. You ever see a baby change from tears to laughter in like a nanosecond? It's all feelings. They're run by their feelings. But okay, at three, there's not much you can do. But the task of life is to grow up and not stay three. This confusion of feelings and behavior and the adulation of feelings or thoughts or intentions, why do people prefer a socialism to capitalism? In terms of behavior, capitalism is the only, O-N-L-Y, only economic system that has lifted people out of poverty. The only one. The number of people lifted out of poverty in the last century is the greatest in the history of the world by far, and it is all due to the free market or capitalism, not socialism. Socialism spends the money that capitalism creates. So why do people prefer socialism? Because they think that capitalism is motivated by quote-unquote greed. So they're not assessing the good capitalism does, they're assessing the motives behind the capitalist. But I don't give a hoot about motives. I only care about behavior. That's the reason I so believe in capitalism. I don't care what motivates people to be capitalist. Let us say, just an example, all right? Imagine that some brilliant doctor comes up with a cure for pancreatic cancer, one of the worst possible forms of cancer people can get. And we learn later that the reason that the thing that most motivated him was not saving lives, but getting a Nobel Prize in medicine. So let me ask you, do you care? If you or a loved one have pancreatic cancer, do you give a damn why the doctor who discovered a cure for it discovered it? Whether he was motivated by the desire for fame and fortune or the desire to save lives? What do you care? Good has been achieved. That's all that matters. Let God assess motives. We are there to assess behavior. But we live in the age of stupidity. Two things have made people stupid in my lifetime. Widespread television and widespread college. I mean that sincerely. I believe that college has made people stupid. Because college-educated people are more likely to think that feelings matter than people who don't go to college. You learn very foolish things. It's very bad. It's a very serious problem. People who believe in feelings. Oh, we feel, we feel, we feel. How do you feel about it? Oh, that triggered me. Grow up. It triggered you. Okay. Everything triggers somebody. It's the way it is. That's the way life is. Life is a trigger. The grown-up figures out how to deal with triggers. You don't run away from them and get Play-Doh and the hot chocolate in a safe room. This is everything. How do you behave? See, and here's the irony. Everybody knows that what matters to them most about others is how they behave. But when it comes to themselves, they think what matters most is how they feel. that's the message. That's my message to you today. There's no chance for the future of America if we continue to be feelings-based. By the way, it's one of the many, 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 many reasons that I am a religious person and why the Bible is my book of wisdom. Because one thing Jews and Christians know, the Bible warns people over and over and over again not to trust their heart, not to be guided by their heart. It's the people who crap on the Bible who are heart-oriented and produce terrible results. Okie doke. There we go. All right, everybody, time for your questions. And here we go. Bo in Texas. I've got no age for Bo. My son, so I guess I would assume if this person has a son in high school, it's probably in 40s. My son was forced to study the tenets of Islam at his public high school in Texas. Then he was tested and graded on his knowledge of the tenets of Islam. I requested the removal of the grade and was denied. Is there anything I can do about it? Any advice is greatly appreciated. Thank you for all your great work. Okay, so this might surprise you. I have no problem in schools teaching the tenets of Islam. What I have a problem is if they do it honestly, and if they do the same thing as honestly about Christianity and Judaism. My suspicion is that this school would regard the teaching of the Bible as a violation of separation of church and state, but a teaching of Islam as perfectly appropriate. That's backwards. I don't have any problem with teaching different religions. I studied comparative religion. I think it's a healthy exercise. But one has to be honest as well in teaching the tenets of a religion. I mean, it is a tenet of Islam that Muslims go on jihad. Will that be taught? I'm not saying this is anti-Islam. It's just a fact. I'm taking this, I didn't make this up. This is from Ibn Khaldun, the greatest Islamic writer, thinker, one of the greatest in the world, not just Islamic. I think it was in the 16th century. He wrote the Muqaddima, the Introduction to History. A.J.P. Taylor, a professor of history at Oxford, said it was the greatest work of history ever written. And in it, he wrote that it is the duty of every Muslim to kill in order to make converts. Will that tenet be taught? I'll bet you wasn't in your kids' class. So we have to be precise. I wonder if that school is taught the tenets of Christianity and Judaism, which, after all, are the bases of America and Western society. All right. Oh, you also, that was very sweet. Thank you for all your great work. Did I read that? Oh, that's sweet. Thank you. Claire, I guess it's Claire. It says Clary. I don't think there's a name Clary. Claire, 20 in Seattle. Hi, Claire. What is your favorite example of God displaying his grace in the Hebrew Bible and why? Well, let me explain something to you. I assume you're Christian. And the reason I assume it is grace plays a very big role. The word does. And of course the concept, but the word does in Christian theology, and it's not as often used in Jewish theology. So that's why I'm assuming that. Grace if grace means that God has, as it were, forgiven or overlooked the flaws of people, and by his grace, as it were, allowed certain things to happen, then it's a very interesting question where that would be, where there would be examples of that. You know, was it God's grace that he saved Noah? Is God's grace that he forgave King David? So it's not a word that I normally use, and that's why I'm struggling here. But I took the question because I want you to know that there are certain key words that motivate Jews and key words that motivate Christians in their theology, and there are key words that motivate both of them. Robbie, 38, Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Mr. Prager. Hello, Robbie. Thank you so much for your wisdom. That's very sweet. Thank you. You have really helped me to get my life direction. So you'd think after that preface, some really, really, really big question will be asked, right? Wrong. Since I have worked at a Jewish deli for the last 12 years, I was curious to know, what is your favorite thing to order at a deli? Well, I will answer you, but I have to say this is not a function of wisdom. This is a function of taste, which has no relationship to wisdom. But in my view, the key item to order at a deli is pastrami. Thank you. With, ideally, mustard. Herbert, 28, Hollywood, California. Hello, Dennis! Exclamation point. I was recently harassed in Hollywood Boulevard, actually on Hollywood Boulevard, for wearing, it should be on, a t-shirt that read, I love Trump. What do you suggest conservatives like myself can do regarding this terrible situation our country is facing? I have a right to support my president and express it, but people are not respecting it. That's correct, they're not. Because the people who hate Trump and the Republicans and conservatives, they know beyond any shadow of a doubt that they're morally superior to their opponents. Therefore, they are allowed to shower contempt on the rest of us because they are morally superior. We think we're right, but we also have the notion that you, even if we think you're wrong, you have the right to express it in a free society. And that's it. So we don't have an issue. How many people walked over to someone wearing an Obama t-shirt and harassed them? I'll bet the ratio of Obama t-shirt wearers being harassed to Obama t-shirt being wearers being harassed is 1,000 to 1, or at least 500 to 1. Why is that? It's something worth noting, isn't it? Because there's an arrogance on the left that is rarely found on the right. They know they are better human beings. They are superior. That is the reason that they call all of us with whom they differ six herbs: sexist, intolerant, xenophobic, homophobic, Islamophobic, racist, bigoted, and transphobic. I mean, there's always an additional thing. Why do they do that? Because in the left-wing mind, if you differ with me, who is on the left, if you differ with me, you must be bad by definition, because I am good by definition. That is the left-wing mindset. I am good, therefore those who differ with me are definitionally bad. It's scary, isn't it? The arrogance is beyond belief, but that is exactly how they think. That's why it's not necessary to take on our arguments. Do you know how often, you know how many comments there are on YouTube and other places, on PragerU videos? This is right-wing propaganda. But they never want, or they tell lies at PragerU. But they never once, I've never come across an example. Really? We tell lies? Well, why don't you give 2 or 3 examples? We have 400 videos up. Do you think 4 prime ministers, 4 Pulitzer Prize winners, professors from Stanford, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Berkeley would give courses for PragerU if they thought we were a propaganda mill? They don't believe, they are so certain of their rightness that they don't need to back up their charges against anyone who's conservative. Because by definition, they are good and we are bad. And all you have to do is say, they're bad. And that ends, because it's enough for their friends. Their fellow left-wing friends, they don't offer arguments. They all go, oh, they're racist, they're sexist, they're misogynist, they're whatever bad term you can come up with. I was called anti-Semitic at the University of Wyoming. That was my favorite. Until they found out I was not only Jewish, but pretty active against anti-Semitism. Okay. Ventura 19 in Madrid, Spain. What a joy. How you doing, Ventura? ¿Cómo está? What is your opinion about Venezuela, and what would you do if you were the president? How would you address it? Venezuela is so sad I could cry, and I mean that sincerely. Place went from the richest country in Latin America to one of the poorest. 3 million Venezuelans have fled Venezuela. The middle class has been pauperized. People look in people who beforehand were engineers are now scouring garbage cans for food. Thanks to the left, because my old thing, whatever the left touches, it ruins. I've written essays on this. I'll give, you know what, that's a worthy opening statement for 1 week. Well, what should the president do? I think the president has done the right thing. He has recognized the head of the assembly, I believe it is, as the actual democratically elected leader of Venezuela. The elections of Maduro were utterly corrupt. By the way, you should look. It would be interesting for you to see all of the American and European leftists who went to Venezuela to support Chavez, the guy who created this horror in Venezuela that took a rich country and made it poor. It's one of the most violent countries as well now. Caracas was a pretty peaceful city prior to socialism. Now its allies are Nicaragua, Cuba, Russia, China, and Iran. Yvonne, 70, or Ivan, 17, Sandy, Oregon. There's a place called Sandy, Oregon? Are you a car guy? I don't know the answer to that question. In the general sense, car guy is noted, no. But I will admit, this last time I just got one, I got my first SUV. And I studied and studied for weeks, maybe months. I studied every SUV, and it was fun. Test drove a lot of them. I got into it. I could see people being car guys. It's an amazing invention when you think of it. But I can't say that it's been terribly animating. I had luxury cars for much of my life. And I'll tell you this. This is my theory, because I rent a lot of cars because I travel so much for lectures. I mean, last year I rented, I think, 22 times just from Hertz. That's a lot of rentals. And I came to an interesting conclusion. You don't have to buy a luxury car these days to have a wonderful car. Almost every car is really good today. It's one of the reasons to get newer cars. They're generally safer. They have, like, if your car does not have a backup camera, you should definitely trade it in. That to me is not a luxury. That is a necessity. When I think of the babies that were run over by parents because they couldn't see when they backed out of their driveway, or their dogs that were run over, and it all would have been, never would have happened if the cars always had backup cameras. Marcos, Northern Arizona University. How can men practice masculinity? What's our time?
28.
Hey, I really know my brain has a measurer. Let me think here. What do you have here? You know what? I'll do that. Let me do the masculinity. It's such a big subject next week. Last one, Tristan, 22, Los Angeles. Do you think the creation account in the Bible is more metaphorical or literal? Well, this gives me an opportunity to ask you for a favor for me, I admit it, but primarily for you and our society, is to read the first two volumes. The first volume has been out. The second volume is coming out in a few months of The Rational Bible. My massive work of five-volume commentary on the first five volumes of the Bible, Genesis, is coming out soon. You can pre-order it now. And believe me, nobody writes, as I always tell people, nobody writes Bible commentaries to get rich. So I'm somewhat not afraid of telling you to please buy it, because it is life-changing. I answer that question in Genesis in a nutshell. The purpose of the first two chapters of Genesis is not to give you a cosmological analysis of the physics of creation. It is to tell you some very important things about nature, about God, and about the human being. That's what the stories are about. They can't be a sequential, perfect rendition if there was a perfect rendition scientifically of creation, we wouldn't even understand it. It would be written probably in mathematical formulae. And remember, these things had to teach people 3,000 years ago and today. One of the reasons I am so impressed with the Bible is that it was relevant 3,000 years ago, and it is equally relevant at this very moment. You can't say that really about almost anything else. It is life-changing today as it was then. It's called The Rational Bible. I hope you will get it. Well, it is always a joy. Did you guys see Otto? Was Otto in here? Is Otto there? He was cooperative and everything. This is America's favorite bulldog. Otto is a very lovable dog. I would say that he's not a genius, but I have a theory on that. I'm not so sure it's important that your dog be that smart. It's important that your spouse be smart, that your friends be smart. But I don't look to my dogs for insight. Get it? So whether they're brilliant or not has never struck me as particularly important. Are they lovable? Do they bring me joy? I know I bring them joy. That's clear. It's like we are created for them much more than they're created for us. And they know it. But in any event, he's not a genius. But he is so lovable. And that's what counts in a pet. Thanks for watching. From my home to yours, God bless you. See you next week. I'm Dennis Prager. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.